Hello and welcome to the Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass, the unofficial companion podcast to the Muppets Mayhem, presented by ToughPigs.com. This is the podcast where we tour through every episode of the Muppets Mayhem to uncover behind-the-scenes stories, Easter eggs, and more with the talented cast and crew who helped put the series together. I'm your host, dedicated Mayhead, Joe Hennis. Today we're kicking things off with track one, Can You Picture That?, in which the Electric Mayhem is contractually obligated to produce an album, so they throw a couple of legendary ragers. For this debut episode, we're excited to welcome three special guests to the podcast, all of whom were vital in bringing the Muppets Mayhem to the screen. Our first guest is a writer and producer best known for his hit sitcom, The Goldbergs, and he's one of the co-creators and executive producers of the Muppets Mayhem. Please welcome Adam Goldberg to the podcast. Hi, Adam.
Hey, I'm now known for Muppets Mayhem, not The Goldbergs.
That's true. Yeah.
Part of your name, though.
Do you want me to redo your intro there?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Totally fine. I'm very, very excited to be here and excited about this show.
Wonderful. Our next guest is a writer, film editor, and former Jim Henson Company intern who has definitely risen up in the world because he is yet another co-creator and executive producer of The Muppets Mayhem. Please welcome Jeff Yorks to the podcast. Hey, Jeff.
What's up? I was terrified to hear how I was going to be introduced after Adam's long intro of all his accolades and credits. And we have Jeff Yorks.
Well, isn't it nice that I mentioned your internship?
That's amazing. It is come a long way.
That's when I met Adam. Has nothing to do with Muppets at all, though. I know that.
No, nothing. No, he's a newbie to this world. Our final guest is, yes, another co-creator and executive producer of Muppets Mayhem, but he is also the man responsible for bringing those golden teeth and golden tones to life as Dr. Teeth. Please welcome Bill Beretta to the podcast. Hey, Bill.
Oh, hey, what's happening? What's happening? Hey, how you doing?
I honestly thought you were going to introduce Frank Langella. I was confused, but
I worked with Frank Langella. He's really? A lovely man. Yes.
Yes, he was in Muppets Most Wanted.
Yes, sir. We put him in a hole. He was so tall that I said, Miss Piggy and Kermit are going to look so tiny in front of you that I asked him if he wouldn't mind being in a 1 foot deep hole with his robe going to the floor.
As long as it's not 6 feet.
And he did it. He did it. It was amazing.
We've already derailed this thing, by the way.
Yeah, you weren't nearly as kind when you asked me to stand in a hole.
Well, yeah, I was like Jeff just said, that was the 6 foot deep one. But
yeah, fair. I had it coming. Gentlemen, let's start with where did the idea for an Electric Mayhem series come from?
Bill, you start.
Oh. Go. Okay.
Two different places. We'll start with Bill.
All right. Well, so after we did Outside Lands and the reception that we got, it was just so much fun to do. And we hadn't done anything like that with the band, you know, to that degree. And it was amazing. And I just started thinking about how much fun it would be to take them on tour, right? Why don't we just take the band on tour kind of thing. And then as I started thinking about it more, I thought, well, maybe it's like a series about them going on tour. And so I had pitched to the Muppet Studios back then. And then the changing of the guard happened and there were some new folks now running it. And I pitched the idea to them and everybody was they loved the idea. And so little did I know while we were talking about, you know, should we go pitch it to Disney Plus, then I can just pass it right off. Go ahead. You guys go from there.
Simultaneously, the stars aligned because Jeff and I had been working on a Muppets Mayhem series for quite a long time, just for fun on spec. I was at the time at Sony, so I couldn't even pitch it. When I finally got a deal with Disney, it was like, that was probably if not the main reason I went to Disney. Jeff sold me on the idea because, before his life as a creator of television series, he was a trailer editor and he loved this idea so much. He cut a trailer for the Mayhem.
I made a living cutting trailers to help people sell their shows. And I was like, well, I have an idea. And this was for a movie. And I pitched it to Adam. I'm like, here's the trailer for the movie using clips of the Mayhem and all this stuff. And he's like, it's great. I think it's a television show. And also I have this deal, so I can't do anything with it. So that was sort of the end.
So we waited patiently. And then when we finally approached Disney, they're like, oh, Bill Beretta has this exact same idea.
Muppets did. right?
Yeah.
Muppets, yeah.
Muppet Studios.
Why don't you guys talk?
Yeah, talk. And we basically, that was a terrifying Zoom because Jeff and I love Bill and his work. And we're now pitching Bill, like, here's what we think Dr. Teeth, here's his backstory. So we're pitching Dr. Teeth, what happened when Dr. Teeth was a child. So, and then Bill was so on board right away and we just started riffing and we were like, okay, this is working. So
yeah, it was just so easy and just like, we just clicked and we all got very excited, more excited than we already had been.
I think also they had the smarter approach to the series, right, which was that it was about the band creating their first album.
Yeah, I always
versus
wanted
my idea of, yeah, versus my idea of the tour, right? So that could be another season, but this was so much smarter, you know, to do the album thing.
Yeah, I'd always selfishly just wanted an album. And then when it sort of clicked that that's what this could be, we had what's called the engine to the show. You know, it's not just day in and the misadventure.
Is that a writing term? Week. Is that a writer's term?
I don't know. I'm only a reader.
Engine to the show?
That's, yeah.
Okay.
Jeff wanted his Mayhem album, which never existed. And now this album is number one on Billboard.
That's crazy.
How about that?
And remember, I kept fighting for him. Like, it has to come out. It has to be a vinyl. I mean, it's like number three on vinyl.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's well, first of all, I love the idea of creating an entire television series just so that you could have a piece of merchandise. I very much relate to that.
Yeah. My next one's about a t-shirt.
Is there any chance that we'll ever get to see that trailer that you cut? Because I'm very curious to see what your pitch looked like.
Well, what's really interesting about it is that that trailer actually became the first sizzle or the first teaser. The first teaser that was released. So
the first third of my trailer was what became the teaser, where it's just like, you know, for the past 45 years, one band, you know, the misdirect, the rug pull. And then I wound up just recutting it with the footage from our show.
Great.
So whereas before I was using all these random movies like Rockstar and Almost Famous and things like that, now I could swipe it, you know, swap it out with the Muppets Mayhem. Just a tight shot of the mixing board with Moog, you know, Floyd on bass, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, it obviously worked because when we saw the actual teaser, I mean, the internet blew up, the Muppet fan community went nuts.
Yeah,
you delivered on the promise, which is also always satisfying.
Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about the research that you guys had to do, probably more for you, Adam and Jeff, to learn more about the Mayhem so that you could write in their voices?
I don't think I did much. I grew up with the Muppets. I loved the Muppets. I loved the Electric Mayhem. That was something. I felt like, you know, for me, it's the Muppet Show. It's the Muppet movie, Great Muppet Caper. I mean, it's all of it. And I sort of knew that. And I watched the recent series, but
I think for Jeff, I would like that he would have done less research because his brain is a giant Muppet encyclopedia. Which is helpful sometimes, and sometimes Jeff would be like, but wait, in the Muppet Show they said this. Jeff definitely is familiar with the canon. It's I think awesome for Jeff. He's doing a Tough Pigs podcast where this is one of his favorite websites. So
get out of here.
So, you know,
but I'll tell you, I mean, it was great sitting in the room. You have Bill, who is a Muppet, you know. I mean, he's a real person, but he performs Muppets. And as we were just like screwing around with dialogue, we would just improvise with the voices of these characters. And
yeah, that was the most helpful, was that we would joke that, like, because Bill is Dr. Teeth, we would propose a line and then Bill would just pitch it as Dr. Teeth. Yeah. And of course, all of that goes in the script because it's so funny. Like, Dr. Teeth is right in front of you saying it. But Bill also has a handle on all the other voices too. So I think the writer's room or writer's Zoom, unfortunately, would basically propose dialogue and then it would have to be filtered through Bill, who has just, you know, 30 plus years of experience with these characters. So,
yeah, I think, obviously, you know, these two guys are big fans of the Muppets, right? And just like what they just said about knowing the history of them. But I think even with the band, that there's, there's what people know based on what they've seen, right? But there's all kinds of things that when we're performing, there's things we're doing, you know, with each other that don't make it to the screen. And we have our own ideas of backstories and things. And so it was fun to throw those out there and get the Muppet performers to make some suggestions about character and throw them into the pot so we could discuss them in the writer's Zoom, you know, and see what would bubble up. And then, or take an idea that Jeff or Adam or one of the other writers would come up with. And I would kind of, you know, occasionally go to the guys and one of the guys and say, hey, what do you think about, you know, Janice having a twin sister, you know? And Dave would be like, that's pretty cool. You know, what is she like? Mm-hmm. And we didn't know yet, but we would then start to, you know, talk about it and find ways of developing the characters more. So that was the fun part. We, as the performers, I think had an idea of who these characters are, obviously by learning from the originators and things that we play around with for years. But this gave us even more, more of a chance to get deeper and find more stuff with them, you know.
And I think that was one of our early meetings too, where we met with Bill. This seemed like this was a thing. This was gonna, you know, we were gonna work on this, and then we met with the performers because it just felt like such hubris to be like, no, we've got this. Like, why would we not work with these people, you know, who have developed these characters, as Bill was saying, you know, these are extensions of them at this point.
Well, we've had situations in the past where people assume that they do know these characters and don't really reach out or have that connection. And what was great is that, you know, these guys were open to hearing out everybody.
It'd be foolish,
you know,
not
making
to,
everybody, you know, a part of the group, which is what we always hope for, you know.
That's great. Yeah, that's exactly what we want as well. You know, we've always said that the puppeteers have known the characters best. And, you know, it like you said, Jeff, it would be stupid for someone to come in and not take advantage of that.
The greatest resource.
And it's good to have one of us in the room, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
Being, you know, part of the creation, because that doesn't happen very often, you know.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I was really insistent with Disney, was that Bill be a co-creator as opposed to just an executive producer I thought, you know, looking back, you know, since the Jason Segel movie, all the various projects, never had there been one of the core group as a creator. And I think if you are familiar with the way that Jim Henson did it back in the day, it's like it was one giant hippie kind of like love fest collaboration. Love, right? It, yeah. Like it, that was the most important part. And, you know, Bill would say, oh, like as we were writing, you think it's good now, just script wise, wait till we get on the floor. Like that's when the magic happens, when we're just riffing. So, you know, I think Jeff and I wanted to make this a group effort as opposed to just like, I mean, like Jeff said, who are we to come in and be like, we got this, we know the Muppets. So it was really important that Bill, who, you know, is Dr. Teeth, had already been thinking of the show, really be in the DNA and the creation of the show with Jeff and I, because Jeff and I are just guests. You know, we now feel like we're now not guests because we have our name on a show. But at the time we were just facilitators trying to get it going I think it's really important that all future Muppet projects, you know, really have the creators in sync with the performers in the way that we did it. Because, you know, obviously it worked. So I think we wanted to be that moving forward.
You know, we talked a bit about, you know, Bill, you being Dr. Teeth, you having 30 years of experience doing this character, but you're also upkeeping this legacy carrying this torch, you know, of this character that was originally performed and created by Jim Henson. So,
sorry, who?
Jim Henson. Oh, yeah. I got a book.
I'll send it to you.
How comfortable do you feel putting your own spin on Dr. Teeth, especially with things like creating new characteristics or backstory for this character?
Well, actually, I was recently talking to Dave Goles about this idea of taking on somebody else's characters, and we both don't really enjoy it. even though we love it, it's hard because, you know, for me, and I'll speak for myself, it's at best, it's an impersonation, right? A fair impersonation, but for me, it's, you know, the person that creates it, that character is driven by that person, what's in them, what that comes from a place. This Dr. Teeth comes from a place in Jim, right, that he drew from something, whatever that was, that helped him create this character. And so at first, you know, you're doing like this, the best impersonation you can, and you're trying to find, for me, it's the essence of the character, right? You're trying to find the energy of the character. I was saying to Dave, Jim had so much energy in Dr. Teeth. I don't think I could last through an entire scene that we've done in this show with that energy, right? So I had to find a way of using that energy, but in not constant, right? Otherwise, then it's just kind of one note. So for me, it was about finding those peaks and valleys with Dr. Teeth. When is that energy there? And when is he a little more chill? And, you know, trying to, that for me was kind of how I think I'm making it mine in a way, if you want to say that. But it's just hard. It's hard because everybody has their Dr. Teeth, right? They love what Jim did. And so I don't know. I don't know if I answered the question. I guess it's just about over time, you try and find ways to put a little bit of yourself in there so that you're more comfortable doing it instead of just pretending you're doing somebody else's character.
Sure. Yeah.
I will pipe in and say, as we were preparing to do the show, I had a Zoom with Brian Henson.
I'm sorry, who?
Brian Henson.
Oh, yes, right.
Jim's son.
Yes.
But right. He's done some Muppet stuff. but no, we were talking about, you know, the process, and I just wanted to pick his brain and any kind of pointers. And Brian said, of all of the characters, of people who've taken over characters, he said at this point, when he thinks Dr. Teeth, he thinks Bill. He doesn't think Jim. And that, wow, that Bill has made it his own. And, you know, it's not an impersonation at this point. It's like Bill is bringing Dr. Teeth to life with his own essence, which I thought was really cool to hear. So,
and it's also, he's lying. Yeah, and I think, you know, he's become so much more dimensionalized, you know, with Bill, and certainly with the show, and what Bill brings is his heart. And that's why you feel and you care. It's, I mean, that's what he's brought to it. And it's in every, you know, line that he says. Yeah. And Dr. Yeah. Teeth was never given a chance to be that. And Bill has given him that chance.
Well, and just like pure quantity, this series specifically has given Dr. Teeth and the rest of the band so much more of a spotlight than they've ever had before. You know, before, like, they come in, they do a joke, they get off stage. They come in, they do one song, they get off the stage. Like, maybe you could say, you know, Outside Lands, something like that, where they can sing a bunch of songs, but that's not character. That's just you're doing a performance. But this, I think a lot of fans are going to come out of watching Muppets Mayhem feeling like this is Dr. Teeth. This is the way he sounds. This is what we'll kind of continue moving forward with the characterization.
I think it was the advantage we had also in writing it, is that people sort of knew these characters. You certainly recognized them, but you didn't know that much about them. So it gave us freedom to really flesh them out, or foam them out. I don't know, or felt them out. I just thought, you know, you could just go and kind of do what you want, starting with the basic things that, you know, people knew.
I'm a glutton for punishment, and Jeff and Bill have really discovered this, that I really read all of the online comments, be it the Facebook pages, Twitter especially, not so much on Instagram. And I'll even do Muppets Mayhem Sucks and do that as a search.
Yeah. How do you spell sucks?
Who thinks it? Who out there is not liking the show? So one thing I have never seen is like a fan saying, this is not the character that I knew. Like, you know, if there's Gonzo or Kermit, or like anytime you do with those characters, like, that's not Kermit. That's not my Kermit. Right. Because that character is so fleshed out. No one is saying, this is not the Lips that I grew up with. you know, Lips maybe have one line. So that was a huge relief for Jeff and I, in terms of like, we're standing on the shoulders of giants, but we're not like, we're like the smaller giants, right? Like, so we can kind of make it
a little less pressure.
Yeah, a little less pressure for us. It was a great way to dip our toe into this world, for sure.
What was the first thing that you filmed for the series?
I think we cut it. The first thing we shot in episode one,
it is not
Nora shows up to the shack. She just found out that they're performing at the shack, right? And she runs into the house to find, I think there's a crowd outside and they're upset because people are, you know, there's animals banging on the drums. And so the shot was Nora entering the house. What's going on here? Animals on the drums, just pounding in rage. Remember the camera swiveled, turned around, pulled back. There's a, you know, Dr. Teeth is building a house of cards. Floyd is, you know, just reading a magazine. Janice is there doing like a tarot reading or something like that. And mm-hmm. that was the day where we were, Adam and I were in the writer's room and someone hurried in and they're just like, okay, we are 2 hours in. You are 4 days behind to set up this shot. And I think we even saw it on a monitor and Adam's like, yeah, we're not going to use that shot.
Yeah, we ended up cutting the entire scene.
Yeah, it just goes straight from, what do you mean, the shack? Let's hope the police don't come or whatever the line is. And it cuts to the police at the pool, you know? That was the first thing we shot and cut.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad you got back on schedule.
Yes.
Right on the last day. On the last day, we almost were back on schedule.
Well, speaking of getting back on schedule, let's talk about this episode, this pilot episode here. We start the episode at the El Rey Theater in Los Angeles.
Which was not in the script.
Right. Reshoot.
Oh, really? Was it supposed to be at a different theater?
Yeah, it was basically in episode something or other when they're on the side of the road and they're performing It's Only Rock and Roll, But I Like It. That was our open. And we cut it and it's cool. And the powers that be, Disney Plus, saw it and they're just like, we just want bigger.
This is great,
but we just want to get into this. We want to blast the audience with electric.
Great. Great suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good suggestion. It was a great way to start the show remind us, you know, we're not creating a new continuity for the Electric Mayhem where they're this little band who are going to grow. Like they're already famous. They already have a following. That's mm-hmm. really important mm-hmm. to what the story you guys were telling.
Yeah.
It was insanely important. And we like, it's funny because when you're writing, you're like, okay, we want them in a theater. We want the crowd going crazy. We want like huge lights and crane shots. And then you are told, okay, well, you can't, it's not a movie. You can't afford that. So then we end up with, okay, they're now on the side of a road. Their van broke down and they're just kind of jamming out. And a cop comes up and he's like, you guys got to move it. But the cop loves the Mayhem so much that they play another song. So that's what
fun.
We ended up shooting. And then kind of Disney Plus was like, what happened to the thing with the giant crowd? So we were like,
you tell us.
If you give us the money, we'll do it. So they were like, we'll give you the money. It's really important. So that's kind of how that happened. So our side of the road with Cedric scene, that ended up becoming a cold opening in another episode where the van broke down. It's a really fun way to start an episode, but not the pilot, right? And then on top of it, when they were like, when we decided, I want to rock and roll all night and party every day. Well, we're like, okay, they're rock and rolling at night. What does the band do at day? So we got to go to the beach also for a little fun reshoot. And we shot so much great stuff that's not in.
A lot of great stuff.
Like, oh my God, Dave did this Zoot thing where Zoot was walking down a line of two people. These like beachgoers that are just like, it looked like MTV Spring Break.
Or like Soul Train, you know?
Yeah, like Soul Train line. And his hands were just kind of waving back and forth. Really like he was just totally out of it. It was
teeth and lips were buried up to their necks in the sand. There was all kinds of fun stuff we shot.
I'll tell you though, and it also got us to Nora in a very cool way that was just on point for character, you know, her not knowing the lyrics, her being a poser, trying to be, you know, making it so she made it. But I will tell you, just from a personal note, going to the reshoot, showing up to the El Rey, driving down Wilshire and coming up and seeing the El Rey all lit up at night and the Electric Mayhem, their name on the billboard. Like I got the chills. I'm like, I cannot believe this was a pinch yourself moment for me. I was just like, I can't believe I in some way contributed to the Electric Mayhem name being on the El Rey Theater. You know,
I wondered if that was a real marquee or if that was
totally a real marquee.
That's cool. Sure. I can't imagine being a Muppet fan and just like driving down the road, no big deal. And then you see that. And well, number one, you freak out. And number two, you freak out again because you think, wait, are they doing a show and I didn't know about it?
Yeah, right.
Not there. That would be slightly upsetting. I do have to mention, because we're talking about this beach scene, there's one shot of Floyd and Animal and they're crowd surfing. And yeah. I paused it just to make sure. Yeah, you could see. Yeah, you could see Eric and Matt.
They had their beach shirts on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And they're keeping their heads down.
So yeah. Simple.
Actually, they're really not. It's just the angle, but they were one of the crowd. You know, that's what we made them. Kind of like when we did Muppets Most Wanted, where they were carrying Kermit through the crowd of the prisoners.
Right. Carrying the gulag. Kermit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Steve was there, but he didn't really hide. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you land on Rock and Roll All Night for this song?
I think just because of that bit that I've wanted to put in a show for the last 15 years, which is like my son, I played it for him in the car and he thought the lyrics were rock and roll all night and part of every day, because no one could conceivably rock all night and then it would be part of every day. Like, so that whole bit with Nora, like that was something that I wanted to get in the show.
And we did, we scripted it. We had like four pages of this back and forth and we're like, this is great. And they're like, yeah, let's, you know, 4 days of shooting. And,
right, yeah.
They would never fit in an episode.
So. Yeah, so it was like, it was great. I mean, we had this like comedic bit that just kind of took on a life of its own. And it's also such a great song for the band.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
that is intro, how they live. Just the anticipation of those drums at the top. I mean, it is really perfect.
Yeah.
And then the fact that it has a comic viewpoint, you know, like it has that turn in there that just gets us to our character.
If only we could have also gotten them in Kiss makeup. I think that would have been the kicker. But yes, as you said, Nora is, we see Nora, we meet her played by Lily Singh. She's wonderful on this show. And she's getting these lyrics incorrect, and she is corrected by her barista at the drive-thru coffee place, played by Colton Dunn, who you may know from Superstore. And I assume he was cool. He seems like a cool guy to work with.
Yeah, well, honestly, you know, that was one of our reshoot days, and we were shooting several things at once. So actually, I unfortunately couldn't be there. I was shooting something else, so I missed that. That scene, I didn't really get to watch that. I was everything else pretty much, but that one I unfortunately wasn't able to be there.
Yeah, once we changed our opening away from the road, then it starts to domino other things.
Everything.
So so now we're like, you know, now it gave us the opportunity to give Nora a fun intro. I think initially she was giving like a PowerPoint presentation to her sister about her plans for the band, which the essence of that is still in the show. But, you know, this way she could.
Well, we shot that too.
We did shoot it. And we also.
That got cut.
Yeah. Oh, you're peeking behind the curtain, like in a pilot for sure. You know, there's so many eyes and it's under a microscope. So you do have that opportunity to perfect it once it's finished. So we hit a couple crucial things.
Mm-hmm. All good choices too. I mean, in the end, all really great.
We'll get to another one in a second that absolutely improved our show, I would say.
All right. We're gonna hear about that in a second, I guess. Follow.
Can I just say one thing? Sorry.
Oh, go. You can say
just
two
in
things.
The El Rey Theater. Just a moment. I think that maybe fans out there would really appreciate. So we're in the El Rey Theater, and you can see it's a full body situation for these characters, right? So there's 14 puppeteers total. Trying to make this scene happen in all in green, right? So the amazing work that the VFX people did at Soapbox, getting rid of everybody. But there was a moment there. I'm sorry. You can cut this if you want. I got to tell you. But there was a moment where we had to wait because we had a problem with the crane. So we're waiting. And I was sitting there and I remember, and there's an audience, right? There's a big crowd there waiting as well. And I'm like, what can we do? What can we do? And I thought of Leslie Carrera did an audition the first time she ever, when she came to join the Muppets, she did this amazing audition. It's a 2-minute version of the entire movie, The Wizard of Oz. It's the most incredible thing you've ever seen. She does every character and just goes through the whole movie the best Judy Garland I've ever heard, the witches, that she does everything, Toto. And then at the end, what wraps up her piece is everybody singing the song Over the Rainbow. And everybody started to sing. And she got the whole room going. It was just her and her green doing this thing.
Wow.
And the room just lit. It was so beautiful. And nobody really felt that, you know, the stress of, oh, the crane and how long is this taking? It was just a great moment. I just wanted to mention that because it was really memorable for people who were, you know, fortunately able to be there. It was just great. It was great.
Well, that sounds really special. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Well, speaking of Leslie, we are going to follow Nora to her job at Waxtown Records, which also I appreciate that Waxtown Records is between a store called Pants and More and Pants for Less. I got to kick out.
I love that you appreciate that because it was a nightmare.
No,
it wasn't a nightmare.
It was.
No, it was a lot of just back and forth.
You have your Disney legal department.
Sure.
And every store exists. So we had boxes and for more, boxes for less. That both of those stores are real stores. So it got to the point where we just didn't give them any other options, right?
We couldn't figure out. The one I really wanted was somehow related to a rock and a hard place, but what does a rock sell and what does a hard place sell? You know? So, but yeah, we gave them this. That was it. Yeah. And we're like, well, what if it's a number? You know, 4. They're like, okay.
We wore them down. Yeah. But thank you for noticing that. A lot of effort.
Of course. I mean, look, this show is made to be paused a lot. So I appreciate that there's stuff to see when you pause. Yeah. We at Waxtown Records, we meet Penny for the first time, the new character performed by Leslie Carrar Rudolph. I have to give you guys kudos for creating a new character, because there's so few new Muppet characters. Number two, creating a new female character. Again, so few of those. And number three, giving that female character a female performer. So well done on all three counts there. And she's a great character. She's super fun and so interesting to look at. She's so different from any other Muppet I've seen.
Great design. Paul Andrico designed her. Puppet Heap, who, you know, basically takes care of the Muppets and makes sure they're all in great shape and all the things they need. But yeah, it was a great design by Paul.
The puppet is so huge. And I don't know that it fully comes across, but like there's one shot in this pilot where Leslie is in the wheelchair with the puppet on top of her. And
number two, episode two.
Oh, is that episode two when she got the surgery and she's all wrapped up?
Yeah.
I still don't know where she is in there. Like, yeah,
well, she's under, she's in the, she's, we,
she's in
we,
there.
We, yeah, we, yeah, we ripped out the inside of the chair and got her to sit crunched up in there.
Yeah, good idea for size when she's next to something, but so much of the pilot is her just sitting alone at a desk, and it's a big desk, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
She's Bobo big, you know. She's that kind of big.
Yeah, that's how we measure Muppets. She's Bobo big.
Yeah, exactly.
I was told before the show premiered that she was designed to be a big surprise, and she is a surprise because she's not in any of the trailers. She was in none of the promotional stuff. Is that how you always kind of envisioned her? Of like, okay, we can't tell anybody, like don't take any pictures, because on release day, that's when everyone's going to see her for the first time.
Well, I think it was that and the baby. Animal. I think more about, we just wanted to reveal her, a great way, you know, the spin in her chair, that hopefully you don't expect that if you don't know it's coming, you know. I think it's a great reveal.
Absolutely.
I think we always wanted that.
Bill, when is the last time besides Walter there's been a new original Muppet?
There's the turkey on Muppets Now.
Yeah, Beverly Plume. Constantine, technically.
Constantine, Gojo from Legal is a great character that Peter does.
I just hope there's more. We really wanted to introduce a couple new Muppets. Mom, you know, Teeth's parents. Just because, you know, I think there just needs, in order for Muppets to like continue forward, we just need new characters.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, it's, and also it's not an easy thing to do, right? I mean, people come up with characters all the time, but yeah, the magic that happens is the performer makes it work ultimately with the writing to support it, right? So sometimes it just doesn't happen, you know, all the hopes you have, and it's a funny bit and a funny character, but sometimes that chemistry just doesn't work. And fortunately, like when we were doing Penny, and writing for Penny and creating her in the room, I would kind of do a version that I would imagine of like me doing a Penny, right? But I heard Leslie in my head, because I've heard her do something similar before. So in my mind, it was like, I think there's somebody that's going to be able to do this. We'll see if everybody else agrees ultimately. But, you know, she just really nailed it. It just was it.
Yeah. She told me that the voice is modeled after, I think, her neighbor when she was like, she moved to this like weird sketchy building, and her neighbor was this just old character. So yeah. She's essentially channeling that. And I realized like a lot of these characters come from like Pepe the Prawn. That's someone that Bill knows. Like you're almost imitating a relative or your parent or, you know, a teacher that, and then it just gets kind of like put into a fun puppet. And hopefully that matches up perfectly. Mm. So that's,
we got lucky. It worked. Yeah. You know, we got fortunate.
I do want to say, I think Davis the Cactus is also really connected to audiences. So there's a new Muppet.
That's right. Davis will be back. We're doing a spinoff with Davis.
We're going to do a whole bonus episode just about Davis the Cactus.
Cactus Among Us. Yeah.
So Nora is making the case to Penny that she wants to work with more bands to help produce some albums. But Penny says, Wax Town's a ghost town. Time to close up shop. I also wanted to mention this Wax Town record set is terrific. There's so many little details. There's so much going on. I visited the set once, and I thought there's got to be Easter eggs all over this thing. And I spent so much time looking at like every album cover, every record. I didn't see any Easter eggs. What's up with that, guys?
No, they do. In the shack, I know they have the cast album to Cabaret.
Oh.
Liza Minnelli was on a Muppet show. So
yeah. That's true. Ooh. Yes, there's a connection. Yeah.
Lots of tickets stapled to the beams, concert tickets.
Well, the shack definitely is full of Easter eggs.
Shack has Easter eggs. You're right. We probably didn't.
We didn't push it there.
Push it there. Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah, that's all right. It's not a real judgment.
But you're talking to Jeff, who's the king of Easter eggs. So I'm sure this is that you know, we'll get him season two. We'll have to step up if we go back to that set for sure.
But you know, we should mention, I mean, we did have an amazing production and set design team. Denise Pizzini and David DiGiacomo and our set decorator Don Deers, and then Jane Madden. But the colors and the palette of that space and trying to make it hip and cool, but still retro, like it's been there for way too long, but there's still these cool colors and textures in there. You know, I just loved her office. It was always great to walk in there and shoot in there. Yeah.
Nora is tasked with shredding all the papers, and she finds the Mayhem's standard famous rock star contract, which of course is a reference to the standard Rich and Famous contract from the Muppet movie. I noticed that the contract is dated 1975, which is the same year as the Mayhem's debut on the Muppet Show pilot Sex and Violence. Nice little Easter egg. I see you.
That was all
true. I also want to say the search engine is full of random Easter eggs.
I wrote this down too. She Googles them, and underneath it says, who is the Electric Mayhem? Why is the Electric Mayhem? Has the Electric Mayhem ever been in jail? And not really a question per se, but the Electric Mayhem stole my cat.
Yeah, this was a fun afternoon. They're like, what does this search engine look like? And so I wrote up the whole page.
I want to hear that story of how and why they stole a cat.
I remember getting this email and I completely ignored it, knowing Jeff would spend the day working on it.
I love it. Yeah, I laid it all out.
That's the thing. He create. You know, Jeff really is the Easter egg man, right? Or the Easter bunny. I think people got excited about that when they would see him, you know, creating these things, they started to try and go off on their own and think of things they could do, like the cups, right, Jeff?
In from
the
seven,
in episode 7, the documentary that Bethany Barton, our props property master, she created the cups that were from the Beatles documentary, the teacups. Mm, yeah. So everybody started to get into this thing.
I mean, it was the best. Yeah. I was just, because I was all about the Mr. Baseman sticker. Right.
Oh, that was so good. That's my favorite Easter egg.
I was just like, and that's when it clicked. I'm like, we have to do this. You know, it's meant to be.
And it was contagious.
Every call we were on, and I mentioned it, people are like, we got it. We're doing it. And
then I'm only doing the pilot podcast. So I will say there's two things that Jeff is responsible for: the baseball diamond.
Great.
Which, you know, gets so much love on Twitter that I was not surprising. I thought, well, you know, I don't know anyone's going to know the baseball diamond. But and then, of course, Jeff, do you want to say the one? There was one joke that I kept deleting out of the script.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was so narrow, and Jeff kept putting it back. And then finally he came to me and he was like, it would mean a lot to me if this joke was in the script. And I thought, you know what, we'll just cut it in editing. But,
but I was in the editing room, so I wouldn't let it happen.
Then in editing, Jeff sat next to me the whole time and refused to let it happen. So you could say which one it is, Jeff.
It's the River Bottom Nightmare Band.
Oh, so good. You teased this to me.
Yeah, I'm a huge Emmett Otter.
I met you at Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con this past year. And I was telling you about, you know, getting excited about Easter eggs, and you were like, get ready, there's an Emmett Otter Easter egg. And you left it at that. You didn't tell me anything else.
I'm so proud of it. I only wanted to, we were going to have an episode where they're beefing with another band, and I just wanted it to be the River Bottom Nightmare Band to be there.
And I'm like, Jeff, people know Emmett Otter because he's in the title. No one knows the River Bottom Nightmare Band. No.
Adam, you're so wrong. You're so wrong.
So there was that. And then the one I'm most proud of is that we set them up. It's in the same universe as the Feebles.
I can't wait to talk about that. We got to break that whole thing open when we get to that episode. There's so much to unpack there. So Nora finds a video featuring Ryan Seacrest. Of course, you know him.
Which was
from
a great
American
idea.
Idol.
I think that was Adam, I think, right? Didn't you say we need to do some sort of like entertainment tonight so that there's some real people talking about these guys?
Yeah, we got some celebs up front.
And Seacrest, like, it was COVID. We had all these COVID restrictions when we were shooting, of course. Ryan literally is such a pro. He had no preparation. He just got a thing on a teleprompter and did it twice, and that was it. Like, he is amazing, that guy. Yep. So
wow.
And you know who else is great as one of our testimonials? Chris Stapleton cracks me up. He plays it so straight. I thought he was just so good.
Yeah.
I mean, a beard, that's your punchline. I grew a beard and it works, you know. It's so good the way he plays it.
Yeah. We see Chris Stapleton. We see Lil Nas X. We see Tommy Lee with his Mayhem tattoo on his belly.
I remember that. Yeah,
that was super fun.
There, and I'm like, and he has a Mayhem tattoo. We have to use this.
Was that a real tattoo?
Oh, yeah.
He really has that? Oh, yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah.
What we didn't use was they gave me my first video camera to shoot. That was going too far.
He famously has a Mayhem tattoo. Yeah. Which features
in a certain videotape.
Yeah, so that's a joke that probably adults get more than your younger audience would. But that's like the perfect joke to me because, you know,
it's real.
Kids know nothing, and adults go, oh yeah, okay,
sure, yeah.
That's the best part about it.
And also with our cameos, when we could write specifically to them, it just made all the difference in the world. I think, you know,
once we knew who we had, yeah.
In that video clip, we also see clips from Old Mayhem production, which was actually a really nice Easter egg just to kind of note that all these things really did happen in this world as well as our world. We see the Mayhem on the Muppet Show. We see them at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. We see them doing Christmas at the Rockefeller Center. And we see a clip from the Outside Lands show, which is also must have been so great that you already had that footage. You didn't have to like film the Mayhem performing at a bunch of different places. It's like there's tapes.
There were some not licensing challenge. What was it? Just getting clearance from some things, but everybody ended up, you know, letting it happen. So yeah, that was great to see all that stuff too. I'm thinking, wow, that audience, look at those audience. Outside Lands just always blows me away that that many people were there.
Yeah, that crane shot just like sweeping over the audience.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Concept-wise, also, I think just starting with the band being beloved is such a good vibe for the show.
Yeah,
there's this thing that's happened. I don't know why, but when you're doing a Muppet project, you have to get the band back together.
It's always a comeback.
It's a comeback. They're all scattered across the country, and we have to reunite everybody. And
yeah, we didn't want to.
That is one way you could have done the show, right? The band had a former glory days back in the 70s, and now they're all doing their own thing. But I think what we really enjoyed was just that they're legends. Everyone knows them. Yep. They're like the Forrest Gump of the music world. They were there when it happened. And that this is really just about them because they're just doing their own thing, making an album as opposed to having them reclaim glory, right?
Yeah.
They never left the glory. They never cared about the glory.
That's it. They don't care about the fame. They care about just making people happy and making music.
Yeah. Performing.
And speaking of making music, this is where we get our first glimpse of the theme song, which, by the way, is a bop. I have had it stuck in my head for weeks.
This is the only kind of fallout that Adam and I had was over this song. He and I went at it for a little while. He loved this song. There was another song that was submitted that I thought I, you know, should have been the title thing. And we... We went back and forth a little bit, but he was absolutely right. The song it just sticks in your head. It's a fun tune. And it's interesting because I couldn't hear it with the band doing it. I could only the demo, which was great. I don't know. I felt like there was something else, but when we then recorded it, it started to sound like it was working and I got used to it. And then you could just feel people were just like, this works, you know, this works. And it did. You were so right. I was completely wrong.
A couple things is written by one of our writers, Hannah, Freeman.
Hannah Friedman.
Incredibly talented. Her dad is a songwriter and had a few hits, and she's very incredibly multi-talented.
Daniel Pinella.
Yes.
Right?
So they went off in one day and wrote this theme song. But what I love is I'll give a shout out to Bill's wife, who when we were at Comic-Con, she pulled me aside and she said, just so you know, I told Bill, she said, Adam wouldn't steal you wrong. It's a good song. So I believe Bill got some influence from his amazing wife.
No. Honestly, she didn't say anything to me. She just let me go through it, you know, and you were completely so right.
Thank you. Well, I'm thrilled it's there. We got so much blowback from Disney Plus because they just want to get into the show, right? I mean, you get it. It's like streaming and they have their metrics. And I think these theme songs slow it down. So they were like, we don't want a long theme song. We want you to just get into the Muppets and have fun. So we really went back and forth with them and we were like, it's a song. It's a show about a band. We just want to start with a bunch of big bursts of joy. And that's what I loved about the song.
There's also a long tradition of Muppet theme songs. And I just could not imagine there being a Muppet show that didn't have a theme song.
Well, especially one about the main, I mean, it's all about music.
To Adam's point, absolutely. You have to start this off with it because we're not going to necessarily get to them doing music for a little bit. So you just wanted to have this blast of music, this blast of color, of psychedelia, all that kind of stuff.
No matter what you're coming into the episode about, you're setting up the energy of the show and it feels good.
Yep.
You know, and it was completely, completely right on. And then the titles themselves just even make it, it's like a flower, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That whole intro is beautiful, full of references to the show that you don't know are references yet because it's only episode one. So that's exciting. But moving on with the episode, we now meet Moog for the first time, played by Taj Mowry. He's terrific.
He's so
good on the show. He's a super fan who sometimes gets to hang out in the periphery of Muppets, just like me. I felt a huge identification to Moog throughout this whole show. So I appreciate that. It felt very real to me. And he's not, it's never a joke too, which I appreciate.
I always imagine like Moog was sort of this version of me when we were writing it, just like this energy, nervous, fanning out, all that kind of stuff. And every note we got was, can you just make Moog a little cooler, a little more attractive, little less of a loser? Yeah. And
we had an amazing, amazing writing staff. It was an all-female writing staff. And Bill, Jeff, and I were the only males in the room. Oh, and
should we mention, can we mention them?
Yeah, sure.
Crystal Shaw, Danielle Moransky, Julie Bean, who else?
Hannah Friedman.
Hannah Friedman.
Hans and Gabrielle.
We had a small, you know, it was Zoom, so you don't want too many people, right? But as we were doing Moog, Jeff would always get so sad because they're like, Moog just, it's like if we would not be romantically interested in Moog. And Jeff is like, I'm writing about me.
Yeah. Oh no.
He's like me.
But the great thing about Taj is like he's so lovable.
Yeah.
That I think in hindsight we could have given him anything we wanted.
Yeah.
The most, you know, fan obsessive fan stuff. And he
I want him to play me.
He would have made it lovable anyway we wrote it. I think that's what.
And he's a handsome guy. You know, I mean, he's a handsome guy. He's love. You're just drawn to him.
He was the best. I mean, he came in and auditioned, and we were just like, I think that's Moog.
Moog. God, the energy was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. He was just hey, you know, it was
and the likability, and he didn't play it like a stammering fool like me.
Right. And again, sure. Just to set up the band. We wanted to show people that the band has diehard fans that aren't like complete weirdos. You know, that it appeals to the, you know, every person.
With any fan groups, right? There's the real kind of the insane diehard people, and then there's the, you know, there's all types of fans, right?
But I feel like you're talking about me, Bill.
No. I think you're more of a Moog.
Thank you. That is a huge compliment. Thank you. Nora beats the band and Moog at this point. And I like that she calls Dr. Teeth Mr. Teeth. And he says, Mr. Teeth is my father, which we later learn is not true. His father is also a Dr. Teeth.
No, he isn't.
He's not.
Is he not a doctor?
His mother's a doctor.
He's a dental assistant.
He's the assistant? I thought they were both doctors. Well, I learned something today. That's
fantastic. See that? Right. Yeah,
you got me. We also are introduced to Animal's infatuation with Nora. This is the first time where he says her name. Get ready. You're going to hear it a lot. He says Nora a lot.
So many different ways, too. It's amazing.
That's true. I mean, Eric does a terrific job with it. It does not actually get old, but he does say it a lot. That's all. They take a meeting in the van, the Mayhem's van, and they note all of Zoot's photos that are all over the ceiling. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about those Polaroids?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, I can't remember when exactly we came up with the idea that they gave Zoot a Polaroid camera to help him remember things. But it became we were fortunate to have the opportunity of writing all of these episodes ahead. Except maybe two, right? Mm-hmm. So we had this chart that we could plan out arcs for the show, for themes, for each character, right? So we, at some point, found, and maybe you guys remember more specifically, but we talked about this idea that Zoot, we're talking about what they could do. What does everybody have, or what are they bringing to the table? And we came up with this idea that the band gave him a Polaroid to help him remember things, right? And so then that became, he's into photography and he's taking pictures and he puts them up on the ceiling of the van or the bus to remember and all the people and all the fans and all the people in his life. And then we realize, oh, there's a great vehicle for this if you guys want to talk about it. But, you know, that's kind of a bookends to this whole thing.
I think we realized, we could do this. It's a treasure map, right? Through his memory, we're going to do like a Usual Suspects ending where this, you know, will flash through all these images and it'll take us to where that money went. And I think at the same time, we came up with the idea that Nora's working on the wrong album. And it's a photo album, and it's the photo album of Polaroids. And so all of that just sort of lined up in this perfect kind of way.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I would love it if you released those pictures as an album, though. We'll talk about this later. But like when we actually get to see close ups of a lot of these pictures, like they're really gorgeous.
Yeah, they're great. They are.
And that's, again, I will say two things, Jeff. Jeff and Bill worked on what are the Polaroids at the end of the credits. And that was Jeff definitely picking and choosing. But the other thing that Jeff nailed, I thought, and it was kind of like a last minute thing, but Jeff was always like, we should do like the Muppet Show, how Zoot always ended every Muppet Show with, with the sax. And that was something when I was a kid, and I sent this email out at one point, my dad would come in and be like, go to bed. And I'd be like, no, because the credits were wrong. I'd be like, there's more. And then I would wait for Zoot, and then I would have to go to bed. So that memory stuck out in my brain. And Jeff was like, we have the Polaroid camera. Let's do these Zoot Polaroids.
I think it was Steinbach who actually came up with it. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was.
I was like, I think we should do the sax. We have to do a Zoot thing at the end. And then Steinbach was just like, what if it's something with the Polaroid? I'm like, it's absolutely that.
And then a lot of that was just Dave riffing and it, like, and
yeah, we wrote out, I think, about 10. And then I think we got like 15 or 20 back, you know? Mm.
And I also love on Twitter, people like, this is my favorite one, and posting it. Like, it's just so cool because it was a little thing we did real fast that, you know, but I think all that little love and those, it goes a long way.
And now we're done with the episode. So that was cool. Thank you for having us.
I was just recalling something. When we were writing the scene of them for the first time in the van with Nora, and the idea of what happened to this money, we were trying to figure out, well, what did they do with the money? And so we laid it on Zoot as he was the one who somehow received it and had, so nobody knows what he did with it, right? It just, now it's gone. It's a given. You're not going to know what happened to that money.
Yeah.
And then I think that started to feed this idea. Well, oh, wow. Could this pay off in the end? Cause he put it somewhere and then they find it ultimately, you know? So that was a fun
thing. And the amount of money I noticed was $420,000, which does not seem like a random number to me.
It sort of was, what? I think. What? I just,
yeah, I just,
you know. Yeah, I think just random. Just random?
Okay. Throw it out there.
400 didn't seem like enough.
No, a little more. They got, yeah.
It was, I think, 416, and we just rounded up.
Yeah, it just makes sense, you know?
That's fair. So we also, in the next couple of scenes, we meet Hannah, played by Sarah Chaudhry. The Mayhem just kind of show up at their house because they say they're going to stay with a friend, and Nora is their new friend. So they're going to crash here. I love that this whole scene, you know, Animal brings the bouquet of flowers that were obviously just pulled out of the front garden. Floyd's ready to hang hammocks. Janice wants to do pants-free hot yoga.
I want to throw in one thing before we get to that scene. I'm sorry. I know we got to get moving. But the scene that happens before that is in the record store. And that was a reshoot. For a couple of reasons. I think we could just, as writers, probably didn't set it up as well. And so they wanted a little more setup and character investment with Nora. And so the first time they shot with that scene, I think it was in Hannah's house, and it's good, but it was shot like the first week. And then when we reshot this and rewrote this and they shot this, they were, by that point, they were sisters.
Yeah.
It was like the last day, I think, maybe.
What's up?
Close.
One of the last days. Yeah.
It's close. But it was just like 4 or 5 weeks in. And by that point, just Sarah and Lily had become so close.
Yeah.
That there was just this magic that was there, this sisterly love that was there that wasn't in that first scene. And we were fine with the first scene, except for the writing, you know, we had to just, let's just set this up a little better. But that was the magic of the gift of that reshoot, truly.
I think the most important thing, though, about that scene is that I come out of the store and go in.
Yes.
In the establishing shot, which I didn't realize was going to happen. These guys thought they're really funny, and
yeah,
and have me going in the first time we're at the record store, and then I'm leaving.
When we return to the record store later.
Yeah.
Are you in that scene? Like you as you yourself?
Yeah, I'm walking.
It's our establishing shot.
It's our establishing shot. We're in the editing room, and for some reason, Bill walked into the shot. I don't know why. And Jeff goes, "Is that Bill?"
I did.
And then I'm like, "Oh, please! I hope he walks out."
Yeah.
We found him walking out during the establishing shot, so we of course would put Bill in going into the store and then exiting a day later.
Yeah, but it's also like, isn't it like a different time of day? Like, didn't we color time it? So it's
yeah, we made it darker
in there for hours.
Bill was in there for hours and hours and days. So we love that.
That's hysterical. I will absolutely look for that on my next rewatch. Dr. Teeth saw a hot tub. And when he sees a hot tub, he has to go to the hot tub and then soak in the hot tub because hot tub.
Yeah.
And Dr. Teeth is completely nude except for his hat and glasses, of course, and a Mai Tai that's come from nowhere. I thought that whole thing was hysterical. I'm guessing you didn't actually submerge yourself into a tub of water for that scene.
I don't know. Are we supposed to give that away? No.
Muppet magic.
No, a lot of great special effects, but definitely underneath. That was created by the set team and set design. They made that was some a house that we found in Burbank or in North Hall. Where were we? I can't remember. Anyway, they built that jacuzzi, and it I was underneath, you know, sticking my arm through for a while, and the people on the outside in green suits doing his hands.
That was the first on location day.
Was it?
I think so. And I went to that. And I was like, oh, we're doing like a real Muppet thing. This is like for real. Like we're out in the real world and Bill is scrunched up performing. And it was the coolest thing ever.
There was a, because we thought maybe we could make the water work around him. So the top of the jacuzzi is kind of like a tray about 4 inches deep, right? A Lucite tray. That has a little cutout of where Dr. Teeth's body goes. And in that was water. And we tried to have water flow and some smoke, but it just didn't work. The lines were too strong to see his body. So fortunately, we have great VFX people who came in and made it just look amazing.
That's great. Yeah. Nora goes back inside the house. And already in just a few minutes, the house is overflowing with partiers. We got Steve Aoki as he's DJing the party. Alice Dinning, the puppeteer, is looking at a photo album with Zoot.
She gives my favorite background performance in the entire series.
Does she? Did she do something specific that you loved?
Nope. She just, I think maybe didn't draw attention to herself in an awkward background actor kind of way. She was just great, and she was just in it, and you just believed her as this sort of hippie.
I love that. Janice is posing for an ice sculpture. I like that. That also did, was that a physical
a real ice sculpture.
Wow.
It was a real ice
yes
sculpture.
it was
actually ice.
It wasn't
beautiful, but it did not read well on camera.
Here's a quick story. The quick story is it is our Stonehenge from Spinal Tap, where they asked us, we're going to have an ice maker make this thing. What pose should Janice be? So Adam and I poured through pictures of Janice. We're like, we like this pose, right? And so thinking it would be this dimensional, like one of those Muppet busts, you know, a dimensional picture of Janice. And then the day of, we see it. And no, they etched that picture of Janice into this flat slap ice.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was almost like they were like, oh, they sent us a photograph of Janice, so they want it to look like a photograph.
Exactly. No, Stonehenge, you said 6 inches, not feet.
Right. You know? Yeah. So they kind of give you literally what you gave them. But I will say Steve Aoki was great. We had a whole bit where I guess one of his things is he throws cakes to his audience, and we had a whole thing with him throwing cake with Animal, and that all had to go just for time. The pilot was already long. And then Billy Corgan, of course, really fun. He's a big wrestling guy. So.
Right. So that's what I was saying before. Yeah. We knew there's these strange things about these people, you know, that like if you're a fan, you know, and we thought he would dig it. So wrestling.
Yeah.
That's and super cool.
What's also interesting is you have a mega rock star, right? Like just the biggest, and he comes now and he's just an actor. So this is not what he does. So it's really interesting to see. I mean, he was like, tell me what you want me to do. Give me line readings. Like he was, you know, it's like on stage as a musician, full confidence. Now as an actor with Muppets, he just wants to do well. So it's really fun to see like these huge stars kind of come, they're out of their comfort zone and just want to like have fun and do a good job. So he was super cool to work with.
That's great. Yeah. You'll love to hear that about rock stars that you love.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I geeked out with him the whole morning. I lamented how, why can't I get any of these Smashing Pumpkins records on LP? He's like, I know. And I'm like, there's so much money. I would have asked you, it's a sign. I can't afford it. And then that afternoon, a whole new like reissue of the both, you know, Siamese Dream and Melancholy went on sale. And
I'm you like, made that happen.
You, yeah, right. I was like, Corgan knew.
And then Corgan came up to me and said, can you ask that Jeff guy not to get so close?
Yeah. Meanwhile, I was hanging over his shoulders, you know, like a cape.
I don't mind talking to him, but he's really close.
Yeah.
Mr. Corgan.
He's a close talker.
So Nora can't have the mayhem hanging out in her sister's house. So she arranges for them to stay at the shack. It's a house that the label owns in Laurel Canyon. Back in the day, it was a magical mecca of music's most melodic minds, where Janis made Meatloaf his first loaf of meat, where Pink Floyd built that wall. They hired the Carpenters. I love that string of jokes. I think that's hysterical.
Yeah,
They arrive at the shack, but it looks just like a suburban house. So they have to add some rave to this cave and some rad to this pad, and they sing "Can You Picture That?" Which I'm so grateful that the Mayhem's most famous song made it into the show, and that also you kind of got it in there right in the first episode. You know, got us excited about the classics. And this whole sequence is so good. It's such an homage to the sequence from the Muppet movie, with Dr. Teeth pouring the paints and everyone painting the house and the spinning screen and all that. I love it. I think you guys did a great job with that whole thing.
No, it was also important to have Can You Picture That, because we reference it so many times throughout the show. It sort of becomes a story point. So even for people who didn't know it as well, we just wanted to remind them.
And what's really crazy is like I'm the Muppet movie. I'm assuming they shot that Dr. Teeth segment in several days. We had like 6 hours.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, what they pulled off in that tiny amount of time was a crew working at their best. And we got everything we wanted, and it looks great. But you know, it's a TV show. We only had a day to do it. Less than half a day. So it
was, I can't remember, like we didn't actually break out a music video type thing. And I think I was working with our director, Matt Sohn, just trying to figure, I was like, I don't know. It was one night I was just writing out, you know, different shots that maybe we could try. And then I would send it to these guys to get approved. Like this little music video, but I always wanted to just start with Dr. Teeth pouring the paint. Cause I figured once you do that, then people are in, you know, they go, okay, here we go. Fans at least. Yeah.
Oh my God. 100%. I literally, the first time I saw it, second he pours that paint, I think I yelled. I went like a yeah.
Put in the camera
by myself in my apartment. Like that gave me such an emotional, like nostalgic, you know, I don't know, a spike of joy. Well, this is not the shack. Whose house did they psychedeliate? It's Danny Trejo, your friend and mine, one of the best friends to the Muppets in recent years. Such a good guy. And it seems like he, like from now on, we're just going to have Danny Trejo in every Muppet.
I love that everybody, that is like a thing that everyone again online is saying. It's like, if there's Muppets, there's Danny Trejo, which I think is hilarious that somehow over the years, he's just now, he's the go-to. He, you know, is that you, Bill? Is that you just?
God. Every project I see if he's available or if we can find a way to stick him in, you know?
So good. Yeah, we had him in a few different spots in the show.
Yeah.
We cut a
scene.
Well, don't say it because it might show up.
Yeah. I'm just saying there's a scene, unfortunately, that got cut with him. But yeah, I love him to death. And so any chance we can put him, I just want it to be that kind of forever
we
thing.
We gave him that little poodle. He has a little dog. Oh. Like,
yeah.
Like so crazy. So good.
So Nora fires the band. That's she's done. That's the end of the series. But first, the Mayhem have to throw another rager, this time here at the shack. Oh, the real Shaq. I didn't even mention the Shaq is across the street. It's the building that looks like a Shaq.
Yes.
How could they not remember? They are playing the song Jungle Boogie, which was a viral hit for the Electric Mayhem back in 2015 in a YouTube video. Danny Trejo does return here. He's a fan now. He loves the fact that they painted his house. Steve Aoki is back.
They taught him how to spin records. They made Steve Aoki Steve Aoki.
That's right. And they play the song Have a Little Faith in Me, the Joe Cocker song, which really is was originally written and recorded by John Hyatt. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. But I think the Joe Cocker version is much more well known. And of course, Nora and Hannah have a personal connection to it through their dad. And you guys got a whole gospel choir coming in and fireworks. And it's just a really lovely scene, you know, and it's a beautiful song, too. A great vocal song for Dr. Teeth to take on.
Yeah, the one song that I wish was in the series was Have a Little Help from My Friends, which Bill performed so well. But I guess, you know, the thought is, well, it's been, you know, they did it on one of the talk shows, and they did it at the Hollywood Bowl and outside. So, you know, it's been seen before, but maybe we'll get it in if we get lucky enough to get a season two. I just think it's such a great song for the band.
Well, you love, that was your pitch, right, Adam? You love that song. Didn't you pitch that?
Yeah, Have a Little Faith in Me is, I just think, you know, I love the song and I love the Joe Cocker version. And like, I know that Bill, it's just that anyone with a gruff, gravelly voice, you know, Dr. Teeth is going to do, it's, that's a Dr. Teeth sound. So yeah, I think that was one that was one that I pitched. But we went through a number of different kind of songs as we are scripting, and that's a real fun part of the show, is like, what song can the band do?
Oh my god. And Jeff, the library of music that is Jeff York's, just, you know, endless ideas of songs that we could use that not only are great songs but have the sentiment of scenes and of the theme of an episode, you know. Really amazing.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, if nothing else, I'd love to hear some of these songs that the Mayhem has already recorded or performed live to be released on another album. I hope we don't have to wait for another season of the show to get the next album, but I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. So Nora changes her tune. She unfires the band. She's letting them stay at the Shack. She's accepting Animal and his weird animal crush on her. Nora gets the okay from Penny to get the band back to work, because Penny has received a gift of compression socks from Dr. Teeth. It's just the right amount of squeeze. So she calls the band, but they've decided to take an R&R road trip. They're going to be back in 9 weeks. We can't have that because we have a whole show to do here, guys. They accidentally drive the van almost over a cliff. You get just hanging off that cliff edge with Animal hanging from the bumper. Dr. G says, talk about a cliffhanger, just to put a little button on that. And Floyd says, Disney Plus is going to love this, which I feel like has to be something you guys put in when you thought this was going to be dropped week to week. Like, we want you to come back next week.
Yeah. This was a mandate from the beginning, really. They were just like, we need cliffhangers. We need reasons for people to tune in week to week. And we're like, okay. And so we gave them a literal cliffhanger at the beginning. And yeah, I mean, we didn't know how they were going to drop these. I think it still makes it very binge worthy. You're certainly going to watch the next episode, whether it was next week or if it was right there.
They put that line in all the trailers, every single one. I just think Disney Plus loves that the Muppets are saying Disney Plus.
Totally. And it's meta. I mean, it's classic Muppets to be meta like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of back and forth conversations we've had or I've had with people. It's like, what is better for a half an hour comedy? Do you drop them all at once so everyone, you know, can take in this giant, you know, movie, or do you do it week to week? I think they're finding that for the comedies, it's not as like people aren't returning as much because it's a comedy. There's not like the giant stakes that people are just, you know, they're enjoying laughing and getting that blast of joy all at once. So
I think it was also something about skewing to a younger audience, to little kid, you know, because that's what they thought the audience was, or that's what they think the audience is, to, you know, younger audiences. Do they tune in week after week, you know, right. Or is it easier for them to just Yeah. Continue.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's pluses and minuses to both. And I don't know what's best. I'm just glad I have it.
It's, you know, of course, there are pros and cons to each side. Is there a pro, obviously, to having 10 weeks of people having this conversation, you know, about the show? Sure. Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. One, but also, one, you don't have to spend 10 weeks promoting the show, which I think is probably easier for your time frame. So, yeah, so this is where our episode ends, with the exception of our little tag here with Zoot taking our photo for the first time. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Is there any, do you guys have any other reflections on this pilot before we say goodbye?
I will say this. Charlie Andrews at Disney Plus is the one that when he watched it, he was like, we want the reshoots, right?
Right.
They knew we wanted it big, and we just, you know, it's a television show. So, you know, it's tough, right? You just don't have the money that, you know, that can, you can do all of your ideas. There's a lot of concessions you have to make, but Disney Plus like really stepped forward for these reshoots on this. And then, because I'm not going to be here for the finale, Muppet Studios stepped up for a reshoot. We were missing a scene because we did these reshoots on the pilot. We really weren't able to get all the scenes for the finale. So
we did these reshoots while we were shooting the show.
Yeah. Reshoots happen.
Advantage and disadvantage.
Right.
An so advantage for this.
Finale suffered quite a bit because we were missing some crucial information. And Muppet Studio stepped up and was like, we're going to help you pay for these reshoots. So
they made it happen.
They made it happen. Yeah. So it was a giant labor of love. And, you know, from so many people. And, you know, Jeff, Bill, and I are really proud of it. We just love it.
Adam, tell them about your card at the end.
Oh, yeah, sure. it's so great. It brings me... Sometimes the littlest things bring you so much joy. So at the end of all of my television shows, I get an Adam F. Goldberg production card. It's called a vanity card. And I always show a picture from my childhood that relates to the episode that I'm doing. So for this show, I have so many pictures of me with Muppets when I'm a little kid. And of course I go to Jeff, do you have any pictures of you with anything, Jim Henson? And Jeff sends me like 100 pictures. Right. Yeah. So like, all right,
I get it.
Jeff and I will split the photo, right? I'm gonna hook up my college buddy. We're each gonna have our little vanity thing. And then it bothered me that I'm like, well, there's no Bill. And one day we were in post and we were in this doing post in this giant maze.
Warner Brothers.
It was
Warner
like Brothers. A liminal space, you it know? Was, it's like Severance. It's just right. hallways it's like and mazes, and it was being redone. So it's just blank walls and blind turns.
Endless right. doors.
I'm already late and I'm frazzled. And the guard looks at me and goes, okay, I'm going to have to tell you how to get to this room because you'll never find it. And I'm like, okay. And I'm not listening at all. And I'm just nodding.
Well, it's not going to make sense when it's right, left, left, right, 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 left, left.
Yeah, but I didn't listen at all. And he's like, do you got it? And I'm like, yes. So
but you're also texting with everybody, right?
I'm texting with everyone. I proceed to roam around for 5 minutes, which was the longest 5 minutes of my life. I cannot find this room. People are out looking for me. And Bill goes, I'm going to make bird sounds so you could find. And he's just a joke. So I hear this very faint, ah. So I text, I go, wait, Bill, I actually heard that. Do it again. Then I hear, ah. So I start to go down the hall. I'm like, keep doing it. And I followed the voice of his bird.
You also have to understand this is also a working office.
Yeah.
There are like people who are trying to get jobs done.
Bill, what began as a joke, Bill, I actually worked and I followed his bird calls and then I found him. And we just found it so funny that I'm like, will you do the cause on as the voice of the card? So I love that the vanity card has a little bit of each of us on
each
it.
Of us, yeah.
And and I think that sums up our relationship. Relationship perfectly, which is I'm lost and everyone is trying to help me.
that's perfect. And what a perfect way to end this episode. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. Jeff and Bill, we're gonna have you back sometime soon, so looking forward to that. Everyone else, we will see you on the next episode of Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, see ya.
The Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass is brought to you by ToughPigs.com. Produced, written, and hosted by Joe Hennis. Logo art by Dave Hultin Jr. The Muppets Mayhem mark and logo, characters, and elements are trademarks of The Muppets Studio. All rights reserved. Transcriptions provided by Katie Lynn Miller. The Muppets Mayhem end credits written by Mick Giacchino is used with permission. Special thanks to The Muppets Studio, Disney Plus, and the entire Muppets Mayhem family. For more from Tough Pigs, find us at Tough Pigs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon. Thanks for listening, and until next time, rock on!